Lenny Curry says the RNC is a go, but the sheriff disagrees. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Just ahead, one local school district is pushing back its start date, in part because of the RNC coming to town. The mayor says it's still full steam ahead for the big event. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, why Florida breweries are in open revolt against COVID restrictions. But first this hour, the latest on the pandemic by the numbers. Nationwide, the U.S. recorded more than 1,000 COVID deaths in a single day Tuesday. Here in Florida, we are at nearly 370,000 cases and just above 5,200 deaths. That is the second highest increase in day-to-day deaths. On Tuesday, the state also recorded its highest increase for cumulative hospitalizations. 181 deaths recorded in Northeast Florida, meantime, from coronavirus. Now, amidst these numbers, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says the city is still on pace to successfully host the Republican National Convention next month.
The position that he takes that we're not prepared for this right now, yes, I agree with him. However, he also has communicated that he's continuing to work with the planners to configure this in a way that's safe and to get him to get the resources that he needs.
Curry doubling down on the RNC, even though this week Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams said that the JSO cannot at this time properly secure the event. So, what is going on with planning for the RNC in Jacksonville? Andrew Pantazzi is a reporter for the Florida Times Union, and he's on the line. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Melissa.
Good to have you on the show. It's 549-2937. Give us a call as we talk about RNC planning in Jacksonville. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page, already getting your comments. So the mayor says he agrees with the sheriff that things are not in place now to host the RNC in a safe and responsible way. That said, he believes that things can pull together in the short time frame we have. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, I mean, the sheriff said that we're well past the point of no return. I mean, the sheriff, I think that the mayor said that he agrees with the sheriff, but then the mayor also said that the sheriff said things he didn't say. So it's kind of hard to assess exactly where we're at. The mayor is saying that he is in agreement with the sheriff and saying that we need more resources and that we're going to make this safe. But that wasn't actually what the sheriff was talking about when he talked to the media and he issued a statement the other day. Because the sheriff is making it sound like there's nothing at this point that can change that's going to make this a safe event. Even though he will do everything in his power to try to do so, he believes it's just too far into the process to actually make a difference.
The mayor was asked twice what specific resources were needed to make this event safe and secure. He deferred the question you report to Undersheriff Pat Ivey, whose answer offered no specifics. You also report the city has still not brought forward a bill to the city council to approve federal grants to pay for security. And so, with a four-day event in late August, what we are looking at is an improperly secured event at this time, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and again, city council, the elected legislators who you would presume would have some function to play if this is really going to be appropriating federal grants, which is what the city has been saying all along, that we're not going to pay for this, the feds are going to pay for this. They still have not gotten a final version of a bill. There was a draft version that was given out earlier this week that I got, but it still had significant blanks in there that were not explaining how this was actually going to operate. So we don't know what the security plan is. We don't know what the venues are or what the space is going to be. Nothing has really been finalized at this point, and we're still about 30 days away from having this event. One of the biggest security issue events that you can have, where the President of the United States and many other political dignitaries are going to be present, posing a significant security risk. I don't envy anyone who has to try to turn around in that shorter time period a security plan that's going to also not infringe on people's constitutional rights to be there.
Yeah, speaking of that, you also report that the mayor would not commit that Jacksonville streets would be free of federal agents. Huge controversy in Portland, Oregon, as we've seen video of unidentified federal authorities violently accosting protesters in Portland, some of whom, we do need to note, were destroying federal property. Now, in addition to that big concern, there's an active lawsuit demanding that the RNC host committee do a better job of planning for the health and safety of Jacksonville during the RNC. Lead attorney W.C. Gentry filed a motion to this effect yesterday, demanding more specifics. Here's what he told us.
Well, we filed a motion to really supplement the record what has gone on in the last week or so with respect to the Republican National Convention coming here and the increasing spread of the COVID-19 virus in our community, and to set out for the court the sort of protocols that need to be in place and plan that needs to be in place to minimize the harm that will be caused by these thousands of people coming from out of town into our community.
Andrew, in this motion, Gentry is asking Judge Katie Deering in a hearing, which will happen next Tuesday, to essentially force the convention planners to put forth many more specifics than they have yet as to how they're going to reduce the spread of COVID-19 in Northeast Florida when thousands of people come to town for this event.
Yeah, I mean, this is attracting attention from really high-profile people. W.C. Gentry is obviously one of the most high-profile lawyers in town, also someone who happens to tilt more Republican, and someone who has won one of the largest civil verdicts in U.S. history with the tobacco litigation. So I think this is attracting a lot of attention from people who want to get answers. And in addition to those lawsuits that are trying to get the details on how are you going to keep people safe when it comes to COVID, when it comes to protesters, when it comes to securing the facility, there's also a city council that should probably be asking similar questions in a public venue. So the public has the ability to weigh in to their elected officials.
In a moment, we'll hear from the St. John's County School Board Chair as to why they're pushing the start date of schools in St. John's back a couple of weeks, in part because of RNC and concerns and coronavirus concerns. First, though, let's take a few calls. It's 549-2937. Deborah is on the line. Hi, Deborah. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Melissa. I just wanted to comment that Jacksonville's politicians and the process has always been, in my opinion, as a native North.
Okay, I think we might have lost your call. Go ahead, Deborah.
Sheriff.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, but at this point, very frankly, it's too much or too little too late, and the sheriff's disingenuous call for help is more or less a dog whistle, in my opinion, for help as the president's help is going on in Portland and potentially in Chicago and so forth. So I'll take your response off the air.
Thank you, Deborah. Andrew Pantazzi, there's been a lot of speculation about the sheriff's move this week and whether there's real daylight between him and Mayor Curry and the local leadership on this, or whether there was some strategy behind his announcement. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, I've tried to figure it out. There's a lot of hypotheses out there. I don't know exactly what the deal with the timing is, because there's not a clear, at this point, what are you trying to do to leverage this sort of thing? Are you trying to get more funding from the federal government with the DOJ grants? Are you trying to scale back the convention? Is there some political motive here? In doing this, it's really hard to understand what the end game would be. I'm not good at three-dimensional chess, so I don't know if there's an unseen motive or not.
It could simply be that the sheriff wants to make it clear that things aren't in place and that he can't do his job properly without the right elements. I mean, we could take it all at face value.
And also, there's been public polling that shows that a majority of Jacksons do not want this coming to the city. And so if you wanted to be someone who is making clear if there are problems here, Please don't blame me. I was put under, given an impossible task, and I don't believe it can be completed, and I just want to state that on the record beforehand. Kind of like someone who, after the fact, claims they were very prescient and made a prediction, but they didn't make it public. You know, there's a degree of, you know, also setting expectations. Now, if it goes well, you exceeded the expectations that you've set for people. And if it goes poorly, you can at least say, well, we never expected this to go well to begin with.
Joyce in Arlington. Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking my call. The reason I'm calling, I think that as soon as our sheriff made the announcement that he did not have proper security, what he really should have announced is that they have made a decision to bring in federal agents. I don't think this has anything to do with he couldn't put together security forces. I honestly believe they're setting us up so that they can bring in federal agents here. Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. Andrew Pantazzi of the TU, certainly a lot of social media chatter about this fear, given the extraordinary images we've seen come out of Portland, Oregon in recent days with unidentified federal agents beating people up, throwing them into unmarked vehicles, detaining them. We don't know where. There's an existential fear out there that could come to this city. That said, there's no proof that this is what is being orchestrated.
So I'm going to admit, I feel like I'm getting a little bit of a few second delay, so I'm missing some things that I think might be said on the phone. But it sounds like you were asking about the fear that's been happening with a lot of the kind of unrest.
Exactly. Yeah. The caller says she believes this is all a setup to give a green light to bringing federal agents into Jacksonville to secure the RNC. The types of federal agents on the streets that we've seen in recent days in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. So at the press conference yesterday, AG Gankarski from Florida Politics asked this question of the mayor and the undersheriff, and they were kind of dismissive. You know, we haven't needed that. We haven't had the same types of protests others have had elsewhere. That's kind of unnecessary. But I don't know that they can guarantee that there's not going to be federal agents. They are not the ones in charge for deploying federal agents. That, you know, it's not like they get to say you can't bring those agents here if the federal government chooses to do so, because certainly Portland, for example, has had problems where local officials have not wanted the federal agents there. And I think that just adds, this has been a really remarkable summer of civil unrest, people continually becoming more aware of what's going on around them. And I think when you add to that a coronavirus, that means a lot of people are working from home or have more flexible work hours than ever. It allows more people to be able to protest during the day hours than historically have been able to, where they might usually have to wait till after work. And I think it also just makes people maybe more stir crazy. And
yeah, there is some of that for sure. Stay on the line, Andrew, as we touch on another important story related to this. We're going to go now to St. John's County, where the school district there has announced it's going to push back its start date for class from August 10th to August 31st, citing concerns related to COVID, but also the RNC. Here now with more on the line, we welcome St. John's County School District School Board Chair Beverly Slough. Beverly, hi. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So tell us why the St. John's County School Board decided it was time to push back the start date of school. It won't start there in St. John's till August 31st.
The primary reason is to prepare our teachers very well to deliver online instruction should that need arise. Plus, we gave our parents an option. They could either come back to brick and mortar or they could be online instruction district-based. And a fourth of them chose that option. So our teachers need to be well prepared to keep up the pace and rigor of brick and mortar schools as they deliver this online instruction to our students.
Now, clearly you're concerned about the spread of coronavirus in general, but you also specifically cited the RNC. Tell us more about your thinking there.
Our sheriff's department contacted our superintendent to say that with RNC starting when it does, that their sheriff's department personnel will be taxed. We anticipate a large number of people staying in St. John's County just because of hotel availability. And you never know what kind of unrest might break out. So our sheriff's department really was supportive of us waiting until the 31st to open just for security reasons so that they would have their full attention on our students.
We should note Duval County is meeting on July 23rd, that school board to discuss its reopening plan and revise it. We're still waiting on news there. But as of right now, if you're a parent in St. John's County, Beverly, what you need to know is that school is not starting till August 31st. And at this time, will St. John's County schools be open, brick-and-mortar schools, 5 days a week? And will parents be given the option to do distance learning if they would prefer not to send their child back into the school building?
Yes, we offered four options to our parents. The first option was 5 days a week in brick-and-mortar. The second option was distance-based, distance instruction, school-based instruction delivered by our teachers to our students. The third option was St. John's Virtual School, and the last was homeschool.
All right.
So we provided an array of options.
An array of options. Stay on the line with us as we continue our conversation with Beverly Slough, chairing the St. John's County School Board, and Andrew Pantazzi of the Florida Times Union. Let's take a few more of your calls. What are your questions? 549-2937. Scott is in Orange Park. Hi, Scott. Good morning. A call from Clay County this morning. Hey, Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. There's a mindset amongst conservatives that all this is a hoax. I was just in Lowe's there and earlier in the week in Publix. Companies that are requiring their employees to wear masks, but they wear them like neckerchiefs. They're wearing them with their noses exposed. They snub it. I have a friend who works for Waste Not, Want Not, and he was at a gas pump, and a man accosted him because he was wearing a mask, attacked him for being a liberal. So yeah, I know who you're voting for, and basically, the guy wound up getting arrested. That's how much of an incident it was. There's a mindset with these people; they are like cult members, and you're no matter what kind of plans you make, there's no plans that will encompass taking a mindset and general philosophies and beliefs of some cult-like radicals and quelling that. And there's no protection against that.
Scott, thanks for that. You know, Andrew Pantazzi, in the motion that W.C. Gentry, the attorney that we've been discussing, filed yesterday, he attached some exhibits to that motion. And one of them was a tweet from State Representative Cord Byrd, who tweeted out photos of a recent event held at Epping Forest Yacht Club in Jacksonville for the RNC host committee that featured a visit from Vice President Mike Pence. And in that photo that was tweeted and has since been deleted, nobody was wearing masks and nobody was social distancing. And so he referenced that as a way to buttress his legal argument that conventioneers coming to town for the RNC, he fears, and a significant percentage of the community fears, will not adhere to the CDC's health and safety protocols to prevent the spread of COVID at a large-scale event. They, in effect, the fear is that they won't be masked, they won't socially distance, and so forth. This is a little bit of what the sheriff was getting into in his announcement, although his concerns related more to budget and bodies on the ground. But this fear that the RNC is going to be a COVID super spreader is driving a lot of our political discussion right now in this city, as we've been hearing from the school board chair as well. It's literally pushing back the start date of school for children in this community.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is also where a lot of the details are going to be so important that we don't have. The RNC has already changed plans, said they're going to have additional venues, that they're going to have some outdoor venues, that they're going to limit the size of the convention. And some of those things should help mitigate some of the safety concerns. But to the caller's point, what we're seeing in terms of beliefs about COVID-19, including beliefs about proper ways to mitigate it, are some stark partisanship that's frankly surprising to see in terms of what are the appropriate mitigation measures. And so if you have people who, due to political ideology or any other thing, are coming here, and also you have people who, the people most likely to travel might be more inclined to also not believe that the problem is as bad as it is, and they're coming into the city, they're staying in hotels, going to restaurants, and they're not following CDC recommendations, and they're finding ways to skirt the city's mask enforcement, which is that you have to wear a mask unless you can socially distance, by claiming, similar to Cord Bird, that you are social distance, because I believe the state representative said that despite photos showing him arm in arm and hand in hand with other people, that he was somehow 6 feet apart from them. And you might see similar things where people are trying to skirt any mask ordinance or mask enforcement through a claim of social distancing. So I think it's a very legitimate fear. We still are, again, everything comes back to, what are the details? Are we going to have details that make it more safe or less safe? And until the public knows, I don't think the public has any reason to have faith or trust that this is going to be administered in a way that will not cause some sort of super spreader event or cause some amount of violence because of the lack of transparency from all parties.
And Beverly Slough, going back to St. John's County Schools, can you provide a little bit more detail? When schools reopen in St. John's on August 31st, after the convention has left town, will all students and teachers in St. John's County Schools be masked? How will that be handled in your district?
They are requiring masks unless there is the availability of social distancing, and we recognize that in most cases that's not possible. However, we're mitigating that somewhat with using desk shields so that students maybe can remove their mask at the time that they're in their desk working. Teachers will be provided with face shields and masks and expected to wear them, and especially in high density student movement, like transition between classes or on the bus, masks are mandated at all times.
Lots of tweets, emails, Facebook comments coming into the show as we discuss more news. Always lots of news happening this summer around town. Here's a tweet. I just don't understand how brick-and-mortar schools are even thinking about opening anytime soon. I saw in Missouri they want parents to sign a waiver to send their kids to school, he writes. On our First Coast Connect Facebook page, we have a lot of commentary. Oh, that one's having trouble loading. I will get to that one in a moment. Here is an email from a listener. Rose writes, please explain to the public how to wear a face mask. So many customers and employees have masks on but are not covering their noses. Rose, you're absolutely right. There's no point in putting the mask on if you're not covering your nose and mouth as you should be. Larry on our Facebook page writes, this full steam ahead mentality, in spite of very obvious concerns to health and safety, is reckless and lacking of empathy and logic. He's referring to the RNC there. Let's go to Tim on the south side. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I just have a comment. I believe it would be better for everyone around if local police kept track of the protesters, because we have events going on around parts that aren't near the convention center, and that if whoever else comes in federal should take care of the convention itself. And I was wondering if the people that come to the convention are going to have to quarantine when they go back to their states after coming to Florida. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Tim. Andrew Pantazzi, I know you're experiencing a slight audio delay, but what that caller just referenced was more questions about how this event will be paid for, what types of federal presence we're going to see on the streets, and will people be asked to quarantine when they leave? Now, in the lawsuit that's been filed against this event coming to town, these questions are all asked along with a whole lot more, pointing out that we are still stopping people at the border, the state line into Florida, and telling people there to self-quarantine. There are a number of measures that the state has taken to try to prevent the spread of COVID that they are not applying to the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville. What about that?
Yeah, so I'm not as clear on the state level issues, but I do know the city is still saying that, for example, the executive proclamation about the masks they believe will still apply, which again has the big gaping loophole of social distancing. I also just think right now in Jacksonville, yesterday, Mayor Curry had some cautious optimism that COVID cases were stabilizing after a recent surge. But, you know, it does not seem like that's the time that you want a bunch of people coming to town, as well as I worry about them going back to their towns. And how that might continue to spread this. This is such a weird time to be doing anything or to be making plans that are months in advance when you're dealing with a pandemic that makes day-to-day planning. You don't know if all of a sudden tomorrow we'll get a surge in cases or if all of a sudden we're going to drop off in cases. And it would be foolish for me to make any predictions based on that, just as I think it's foolish for the mayor or anybody else to think that they know with certainty what's going to happen next month.
Here's an email, meanwhile, from a teacher. Bill emails the show. We know that if COVID is in the community, it will show up in schools. We also know that a reactive school closure will mean many more cases and will be highly disruptive to learning. Proactive closures, he said, mean less uncertainty. So Beverly Slough, if cases spike after the convention, will your school district, St. John's County, go back to all virtual learning? That is an option that you're considering, correct?
Well, really, we're not.
You're not.
The only way we would go back to all virtual learning is if we got a directive from our health department or from the governor. That said, if we were to have an outbreak in a particular school, it's possible that we would close that particular school for a period of time to get past the outbreak and to thoroughly clean the school. But we really are not looking to completely close our school district unless we're directed to do so.
Do you have any comment on the lawsuit the Florida Teachers Union Association, the Florida Education Association, has filed against the state over the order by the Education Commissioner to have brick and mortar schools open 5 days a week next month?
I really don't want to comment on that. The FEA likes to challenge things from time to time, but in our view, our children need to be back in school. They need to socialize with their peers for their mental health, and certainly face-to-face learning is far superior to online learning. So we look forward to the day that we can invite our students back into our classrooms and hopefully keep them as safe as we possibly can. We also look very forward to the day that the COVID virus tames itself and becomes maybe like a flu that just appears from time to time.
Let's take one more call. It's James on the north side. Hi, James. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Miss Alyssa?
All right.
I have an observation. I noticed that when Mr. George was, we all saw it on TV where he was killed. Usually the media don't show stuff like that. It's like they sanitize a lot of stuff we see. So what they show calls of, a lot of people to really stand up and stop protesting and start a movement. Why is it that we don't put some cameras into the hospital that's showing these people that have coronavirus, and showing them that's on these ventilators, and showing them how sick they really are? And then you won't get a lot of these, and I hate to use this term, Trumpsters get out there and tell you, this is a hoax and all this sort of mess like that. If they show where these people that really are sick, and that is in that shock and awe, and people can see it, because Americans are just like that.
Look, James, we're not allowed in. I mean, that's the simple answer to that question. They're not going to, in order to prevent more spread of disease, which is a legitimate concern, they're not allowing reporters with cameras into ICUs right now or COVID wards in hospitals. A few videos have leaked out by medical personnel that have shot inside these hospitals where there are high numbers of patients, but we're not permitted entry right now inside for our own protection. But that's is the answer to that question. We are trying to cover this as well as we can with the information that we have. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. Andrew Pantazzi, let's close with you. To sum it all up, as we've been hearing from Ms. Slough, St. John's County Schools has pushed its start date back to the end of August. We will get more information from Duval County Public Schools next week. And we continue to seek more information from local officials and the RNC host committee about how this convention is going to proceed. Anything else that you learned yesterday that you'd like to share?
I think there's one other thing which goes to what's happening in St. John's County. Ann Schindler, First Coast News, and myself, we both asked the mayor about how something like this diverts resources. When you've got such a massive event that takes so much attention, so much so that even in St. John's County, the sheriff's office is saying they have to dedicate a lot of their resources to this, and they're asking the school district to hold back on opening school. And for us, the point we were making was about a historically high number of homicides at this point in the year. And the mayor said that he believed that the sheriff's office was able to basically walk and chew gum at the same time, and that there was no problem in keeping people safe. There's a real disconnect between, I think, the public officials here, between the mayor. A historically high number of homicides is not the public officials keeping people safe, despite the mayor's insistence that it is. And I think the idea that spending this much time on the convention does not have some opportunity cost is also misguided. Even if we do get reimbursed for all expenses that we're taking in here, there's still just a lot of time that is going into planning this event right now when the city is dealing with crises on many fronts, crises in public confidence, both with the police and with public officials, crises in terms of violence that is rising above rates that we haven't seen since the late 80s and early 90s, crises in terms of a pandemic that is taking more lives and that continues to spread. And meanwhile, as a reporter, I need to focus on the RNC as well, because that is one of the most important stories happening right now. And we really could be spending more of our time on other things.
Yeah.
So I think that's just the last point I would make, is that bringing the RNC to Jacksonville also just takes a lot of mental energy that would otherwise be spent on problem solving for the many, many other problems that the city of Jacksonville is facing right now.
Thank you for that. And we're running a little tight on time. I want to quickly note that I misspoke a minute ago. Florida is apparently no longer doing health checks and stops at the Florida state line. Eagle-eyed listeners have told me that. So thank you so much, Andrew Pantazzi of the Times Union. And also joining us, I want to thank St. John's County School Board Chair Beverly Slough. Thank you both for updating our listeners this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. A quick break, and in a moment, why Florida's craft brewers are revolting against COVID closures. We'll be right back.
Citizens Property Insurance. Whether recovering or preparing, Citizens is available. Claims can be tracked at citizensfla.com or reported by calling a live Citizens rep 24/7.
I'm Alan Rhodes, and I'm an engineer. you're just never doing the same thing twice. One day I could be working on the tower, the next day I could be in a studio working on a mixer. So if something goes wrong on air, I'm the person that has to come in and figure out why it failed and come up with a solution, put it back on the air. I do all this to make sure you're getting the stories and information you depend on at WJCT News 89.9.
Electro Lounge can now be heard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on WJCT 89.9 HD4 Electro Lounge Radio or on the WJCT app. Electro Lounge Radio, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Welcome back. Well, one group of business owners that's been hit particularly hard by the pandemic are Florida's craft brewers. Yesterday, the Florida Brewers Guild sent a letter to Governor DeSantis saying that their internal polling shows they are likely to lose more than 100 breweries around the state permanently if current restrictions continue for more than the next 2 weeks. Ben Davis is the owner of Intuition Ale Works in downtown Jacksonville, and he's on the line. Hi, Ben.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So dozens of local breweries may shut their doors permanently if current bar closures continue. What was the plea that all of you made to Governor DeSantis? What are you asking for?
I mean, I think, you know, we're asking for a solution to, the issue of the closings of tap rooms. We feel like we're a unique business, and that in the fact that we are manufacturers and we're also retailers, and that, you know, we can open up in a responsible manner that meets the guidelines that are applied to other businesses, restaurants, et cetera. So I think that's where the frustration is for us.
You feel that breweries are being unfairly singled out?
I mean, I don't know if we're being singled out necessarily, but I think overall, I mean, Intuition will be 10 years old in October, and I think since, you know, we got into this industry and others have, you know, we felt that there's a strong misunderstanding of how our industry operates. And I think this is just kind of another example of that. I mean, I think there is an easy solution to this problem, but I don't know that, you know, it's ever going to come to fruition.
What would the solution be?
My feeling is that if you are licensed in the state of Florida as a manufacturer of beer and you have your federal license, which basically come hand in hand, I think that our tap room should be able to be open. I mean, I don't think that we're asking for anything unique. I mean, they've carved out exceptions for a lot of other industries in the state, and yet we're kind of standing here saying, well, what about us? So I think that, you know, when you start to say, there are, you know, concrete examples of breweries going to be going out of business when we're potentially losing 30% of the breweries in the state. It should be taken seriously.
You can still serve beer on site simply because you have a partnership with Mojo Barbecue. So you have a kitchen at Intuition Ale Works that gives you an exception. Establishments that serve food are allowed to stay open in a way that that simple alcohol establishments are not, correct?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. We've had a full kitchen since we opened almost 4 years ago downtown. So we're licensed. We're regulated by the same. And we are a restaurant, in the eyes of the state with our licenses. So we definitely benefit from that. But overall, I mean, you know, then there's issues of breweries now are scrambling to try to get kitchens. They're scrambling to try to find a solution, which I think is kind of unfair when you're considering that some of these breweries have already are financially struggling. So to ask them to spend money is pretty difficult right now.
And so in essentially shutting bars down, except for to-go sales, the idea was to slow the spread of COVID, especially since young people who congregate in bars are big spreaders of the disease. But in your letter to the governor, you and all the other brewers around the state point out that the Florida craft brewing industry is unique. You're a manufacturing industry first and retail second, and that craft breweries are the number one tool used by cities to bring dying neighborhoods back to life. The craft brewery phenomenon around the country is a tool of economic development. And so you're making that argument too, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it might be a little bit strong, you know, wording that we're number one, but we definitely play a role in it. I mean, I know, you know, our original location over in King Street, you know, in Bold Cities over there, you know, that area has, I think, improved over the years because of the investment that breweries have made. I mean, I think there's plenty of examples around the state and the country of breweries opening up in areas and being, you know, kind of a catalyst for improving the area. So I think that definitely, you know, it will come to a stop, you know, as breweries are not going to open up here, you know, or they're going to start closing. And then you've got, you know, empty storefronts, which everyone knows is not good.
Not what we want. Now, you're also one of a few local breweries that distributes your product in grocery stores. You have had to put a lot of things on ice, though, like your new beer hall that is a live concert venue. So you're sort of in a holding pattern right now, Ben. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah. It's not been a fun year by any stretch of the imagination.
No fun. And so what about the RNC? We were talking about that a few moments ago. How do you plan to handle the convention, which will be all around Intuition Ale Works?
Yeah, we have no idea.
No idea.
You know, you know, I mean, it seems like it's almost like a day-to-day, you know, statements are made of what's going on. So we're just kind of trying to keep up, stay in the loop the best we can. I mean, definitely being in the kind of the middle of it with our location, you know, definitely is a little bit stressful, not knowing, you know, being concerned about, you know, the safety of our employees, if our business is going to be interrupted, things like that. So that's definitely a concern. But I mean, also just overall the city, you know, you get worried about, you know, what are going to be the potential, I don't want to say damage, but, you know, issues that we might face after it.
Yeah. But in the meantime, people can support Intuition Ale Works and other breweries. They can get product to go. And in your case, they can come into the establishment. What else can people do to support you?
I mean, I would just go to all your local breweries and support them by crowlers, by, you know, beer to go. You know, we are definitely, I would say, better off than a lot of the other local breweries because we do serve food and we can have consumption on site. I think a majority of the breweries in the city cannot. So I would say, you know, support, you know, make sure you're going to all the breweries in your neighborhood and buying as much beer from them as possible.
We all need a drink in these times anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well do it from a locally owned business like Intuition Ale Works, which, by the way, you're celebrating your 10-year anniversary in November. So kudos. Hopefully better times in November when we come back to you to talk about that, Ben.
Yeah, I'd rather it be 9 years if we could just redo this year. So.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that sentiment going around. Thank you so much. He's Ben Davis, owner of Intuition Ale Works in downtown Jacksonville. Thanks, Ben.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you.
In a moment, how you can support other downtown businesses. We'll tell you about Downtown Vision's new way to help us all shop the urban core and some other positive news. Yes, there is some. It's coming up in a moment, our What's Good Wednesdays. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Izzy Bonasso got knee surgery after a tennis injury. Then her dad got a letter from a surgical assistant.
It was very cordial, and it basically was explaining that this was not a bill for services.
But the implication was another unexpected bill for her surgery might soon be on the way. What to do if you get a letter like that? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starting at 4 here on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, Michaela Coel, the creator, writer, director, and star of the HBO series I May Destroy You. She plays a young writer famous on social media who's sexually assaulted, but she has no idea what happened because her drink was spiked. The story comes out of Coel's own experience of sexual assault. Join us.
Today at noon here on WJCT News 89.9.
The world's reporters and producers have a singular mission to put you in touch with events around the globe that affect life here in the U.S. From the coronavirus to global trade to efforts to dial back climate change, each day we bring you fresh insights, unique voices, one-of-a-kind reporting. Join us for an hour that takes you around the globe. It's right here. It's the world.
Today at 3 here on WJCT News 89.9.
All elections are unique, but this year will be like no other. For many election officials, there's already a sense of dread over how the system will work amid a pandemic. Elections are complicated, but they shouldn't be chaotic. I'm Jen White. How do we avoid that this November? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. It's Wednesday, which means it's time for our weekly look at what's good in this community. We're going to kick off What's Good Wednesdays with exciting news from Downtown Vision, Inc. They're helping us shop the urban core with a new e-gift card. Kat Hardwick is Downtown Vision's VP of Marketing. Hey, Kat.
Good morning, Melissa.
So you've launched a new DT Jacks e-gift card. It's digital. How does it work?
It's a really great opportunity for people to come to our website, dtjacks.com, and just search gift card or go to DT Jacks e-gift card. And you can see who's participating and easily buy your gift card online. It's good at 26 locations and counting, and it lives on your phone. You get an email from them, and you can either keep it on your phone or you can print it out if you don't want to keep it on your phone. And you can use it at multiple locations. And always check your balance right on your phone.
And you are providing bonuses as an incentive too, right?
We are. So, you know, we've noticed that traffic downtown, of course, has decreased significantly during COVID. We're seeing about 45% of the visits we saw pre-COVID today. So, you know, we wanted to launch this, but we wanted to really give people that incentive to come in and buy this. So for a limited time through the end of September, at select values, if you buy a gift card, we're going to give you some added money. And it comes through as a separate gift, so it's something that you can either keep for yourself or pass along to a friend or family member.
This is great. Buy one of these for yourself, or as Kat said, you can give one out as a gift, and they are actually giving you bonuses too, so your money goes farther. This will help keep downtown businesses open. And you can do it right on your phone. Just go to dtjacks.com or dtjacksegiftcard.com. New gift cards to shop the urban core. Thank you so much, Kat, VP of Marketing at Downtown Vision, Inc. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's a very good thing. We have some more good news for you right now here on What's Good Wednesdays. Over at Edward Waters College, they've announced they're going to pay the financial balances of eligible returning students for both the upcoming fall and spring semesters. Tuition fees, room and board, and activity fees all paid. This new student support initiative at EWC is hashtag WeGotYou. They've got their students at the first historically black college or university in the state. And this is just a truly compassionate move. Kudos, EWC. We also want to give a shout out to Congaree and Penn Farm, one of our favorite places in Northwest Jacksonville out of Old Kings Road. They produce some amazing and tasty products. Their pecan oil, which was a garden and gun made in the South runner-up, just won a 2020 Good Food Award. You can get this golden elixir at congareeandpen.com, or you can go visit the farm, which is a really cool thing to do right now. This is a working farm where you can shop, dine, socially distance, and enjoy the pastoral beauty of this place, which is still in the city of Jacksonville, but it feels a world away from the hustle and bustle of the city. Very fun stuff there. And last but not least, the Salvation Army's virtual Kettle Crush 5K Fun Run is happening as a fundraiser for the Salvation Army and to support the hungry and homeless in this community. This is a virtual race. How do you do that? Well, you track and record your time based on the honor system, and you submit a finishing photo and time of your walk or run to the Salvation Army. You can register for this now and complete the 5K or fun run anytime you want before July 25th. It's a great way to support a local nonprofit trying to help the most vulnerable in this community, and it's a great excuse to get off the couch and get moving during this pandemic. Now, if you have something good that you want us to put on our weekly menu, email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And to sign up for our free What's Good Wednesday e-newsletter, just go to wjct.org and subscribe. It's free and it goes out each week where we try to highlight the many people and organizations doing what they can right now to support this community in a stressful and challenging time. Again, it's our free What's Good Wednesdays e-newsletter. That's doing our bit, I think, is what we're trying to say. And thanks for listening. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. By the way, she is going to go running in that virtual 5K because her ankle is on the mend after being messed with recently. So Heather is going to be out there running. You'll see her out at the beach. Josh Torres is more of a Formula One driver. He's our show director. Station news director is Jessica Palumbo, and our digital editor is the great Bill Bortsfield. Keep those emails coming to all of us, to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can also catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, and our podcast will be up later today. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back right here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow to connect with you. Have a great day. Enjoy What's Good Wednesdays. That e-blast goes out later today. And please, wear your masks. Don't just put it on your chin. That doesn't do any good. That's not smart. Put it over your whole face. Be a grown-up. Be a compassionate person. Will you do that for me, please, everybody? Thanks. See you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.